How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 71 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review once you're there also, and find us on audioboom.com too. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. I'm on every day of the week now, Monday through Friday. Thunder beat the Sixers, opener of the season, 103-97. Keep talking about real basketball. We have real basketball now. 32 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists, Russell Westbrook. Enes Kanter, 17 points, 12 boards. Steven Adams had a pretty bulbous scoring game as well. Westbrook was so impressive in this one. If you didn't get a chance to watch it, Sixers got out to an early lead, 18-7. Some dude jumped out from the stands and double flipped off Russ, and Russ shook him off and took the Thunder on a 14-1 lead, 14-1 run. You know, Philly really kept it close the whole way. It was a really sloppily played game, honestly, on both sides. I didn't think the Thunder played great. They struggled with spacing. They struggled with driving lanes, which was obviously an effect of the spacing. They didn't get to the line too much. They didn't make their threes. They were kind of sloppy on the defensive end, I thought. They misrotated a few times. I thought Billy Donovan coached an interesting game for sure. I thought he coached a good game, honestly. I take that back. I shouldn't say interesting game. The way he went about adjusting in the middle of the game was really fascinating to watch, the way that he stuck with the Kanter Adams lineup, the way that he put Singler with a lineup that had three starters in it, and a lineup that could go rebound a lot. I thought he played a lineup that was super interesting in Westbrook, Robertson, Singler, Adams, Kanter, which is basically, all right, we're going to have Westbrook create open shots for Singler. We're going to have Adams and Kanter gobble up all of those misses, and we're going to see if Adams can shore up for the defensive issues. Adams and Robertson can shore up for the defensive issues with Kanter. That was an interesting lineup. Kind of interested to see how that goes. The Adam-Kanter lineup was great. Honestly, those lineups, it wasn't the same one all the way through, but lineups with Adams and Kanter won them the game. They outscored the 76ers 32-16 with those two guys on the court. They grabbed more than half of the available offensive rebounds during that time. They were gluttonous, man, during that whole time. They were really good. Kanter played, I thought, a really, really good game against Philadelphia. He really feasted on Philly playing a bunch of kind of smaller fours. The thing about Philly's fours is that they're built like stretch fours, and they act like stretch fours, but they don't actually stretch. They leap. They're leap fours, basically. Like, Jaren Grant doesn't shoot yet, and he seems like he's going to be a good player. He's not quite a three, not quite a four, and you know, Kanter doesn't have to go out to the perimeter to guard him because he can't really shoot. Same thing with, like, a Rashad Holmes. And they're both just ridiculous athletes and will jump out of the gym to block your shot, as we saw a couple of times. I mean, those are rim-protecting threes, really, playing the four, which is an amazing thing to have both those guys on your team. I really enjoy watching both those guys. I think they're really both going to be players. But when you put them at the four, that's a way that you can really feast on the offensive boards with Adams and Kanter. And Kanter doesn't have to stray all the way out to the perimeter to guard those guys. And you can feel comfortable putting Adams on Embiid in those situations like the Thunder were doing. And Kanter and Adams, really, those lineups did really well for them. It was what won them the game. Westbrook, though, was really the most impressive part. He was great. He was really, really fantastic. It was just an ideal Russell Westbrook game. He controlled the pace of the game. He was able to get to the hoop. He was able to get to the line. He was able to create. He went to the post a lot. He took a lot of contested mid-range shots. He took a lot of contested, you know, fadeaway shots, post shots, you know, off the dribble pull-ups, you're going to get those shots with Russell Westbrook. He happened to make them. Look, if he misses, you know, five of the ones that he made, then, you know, that game obviously looks worse. But I thought he did a great job controlling pace. The Thunder played at about a 105 possession pace they played about a 105. Yeah, 105 with Russell Westbrook on the floor. Really high. That's a really high number. That's a really good number for him. And I think it was the second of any Thunder player while he was on the floor behind Victor Oladipo, which is a good thing. You want the Thunder playing a high pace with him and Oladipo on the floor. And they limited turnovers with Westbrook on the floor. That's a really nice juxtaposition right there. I thought Westbrook did a great job controlling the offense in the fourth quarter, whether it be finding Adams, finding Kanter, hitting guys on the outside, moving the ball on the perimeter. They did a better job offensively in the fourth quarter for sure. And that was when they outscored Philadelphia by 12 in that period. So that was an impressive way to close out the game for them. And Westbrook was especially good during that fourth quarter. Victor Oladipo was not great. Victor Oladipo struggled. It's going to take some time for Victor Oladipo and Russell Westbrook to work out the chemistry. That's something that I think any reasonable person would know. What maybe the average Thunder fan doesn't quite realize is that Victor Oladipo, historically, he'll have games like this. He tends to do this. That was kind of the issue in Philadelphia, in Orlando. It was the inconsistency. He would have a game where he really wasn't very good for one game, and then he'd come out, he'd have a great game a couple of games later. And then the next game, he'd be a little down, and then he'd be great for three games, he'd be down for one. And you kind of... You don't really get that consistent play historically from Oladipo. That's something the Thunder are going to want to shore up in him. It's something that you get from young guys, too. I mean, it's something that might be a fixable trait. I mean, that varies depending on the player. But Oladipo not playing well in his first game of the Thunder, I don't think it's disconcerting. I think I've said for a while now that Oladipo and Westbrook, they have overlapping skill sets. This is going to take a while for them to figure out how to make it work. It took LeBron and Wade at least a year before they really figured it out. Probably two before they really had that thing chugging along. And that's LeBron and Wade. that's two first ballot, you know, all-time Hall of Famers. That's Russell Westbrook is that, but Victor Oladipo is, you know, not in that category. You know, nobody's in the category of LeBron James. Russell Westbrook can say he's in that stratosphere. Victor Oladipo can't. This is not LeBron and Wade. It's going to take time. It's going to take time, and that's fine. But there's no reason to panic after one game. You're listening to this podcast, so I assume you love basketball. Are you ready to get into the action? You can check out BetDSI.com. It's been over 20 years in business. It's top rated. It's safe. It's a great way to go about betting. And BetDSI has a great basketball special. You sign up today and you get $10 free to try out their service. BetDSI is also offering a 100% bonus on your first deposit. It's a great customer service. There's fast and easy payment of winnings. Hundreds of football and basketball wagers to choose from. You can also get UFC. You can even get Trump versus Clinton to bet on elections. BetDSI even has live in-game wagering on all football, basketball, and other major sporting events. You can play virtually everything at BetDSI. Go to BetDSI.com now. That's BetDSI.com. Go there now and use promotion code THUNDER10, 10 like the number 10, THUNDER10, to get your free wager and start winning today.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
A few Twitter questions. Sorry, we're going for a little bit of a shorter episode than usual today. I know I'm usually in that like 20 to 25 minute sweet spot now, which is nice. I'm glad that I kind of hit a consistent length with these episodes. That was kind of a goal of mine. I was being a little inconsistent. I know when I have a guest, I tend to go longer, but when it's just me, I like that I'm in a consistent sweet spot. I'm recording this late. I got to leave for the airport around 6 a.m. I got back from the game real late. And honestly, I need to be awake tomorrow so I can write my column and do my podcast for the next day, or else you guys are getting nothing tomorrow. But the first question from Twitter, from JJ Santos. Should we be worried that the Thunder only won by 6? I would say that there were elements of this game that if you're a Thunder fan, it would be reasonable to worry about. But the result is not actually one of them. What you have to remember about the first game of the season. People say you can't make judgments off the first game. People go really extreme with either way, honestly. They say either you can't make judgments on the first game of the season, or they say, oh, wow, the Thunder lost – or the Warriors lost by 29, so they must be worse with Kevin Durant. You can't judge off the results. That's something that you can't do. You can't judge off the results. But there are things that you can judge. There are things you can judge. You can look at it and say, Billy Donovan was staggering Westbrook and Oladipo. How did that work? You can look at it and think, Billy Donovan was playing around with lineups to try to find shooting. How did that work? Now, so far, something that we can judge, which I think is the lasting theme, the thing that I think Thunder fans can be worried about because it's something that was expected, it's something that will be a theme for all 82 games this year, unless this team's identity totally changes because of crazy personnel moves that are unexpected right now. It's going to be a theme all year. The Thunder are going to have spacing issues. That is going to happen. That is going to be a thing all year. The Thunder were struggling to get to the hole, whether it was Westbrook and dribble penetration, Oladipo driving to the rim, Steven Adams rolling to the rim, Kanter getting in there. They did a good job at getting out and pushing pace and trying to get those mismatches. And they had a couple of times a few notable times where they were slow getting into their sets. And I'll have to go back and rewatch the game. But I thought on first glance they did a pretty good job getting into their sets pretty quickly, which is important for them. That's important to beat spacing. But they're going to have spacing issues. They're going to have issues driving the lane, no question. And that was something that Philadelphia horribly miscommunicated in a few situations, especially in this one stretch in the second quarter where they just kept trying to double Russell Westbrook in the post, and they couldn't have messed it up more, like three times in a row. But Philadelphia was packing the paint against them. That was their strategy. They were not guarding Sabonis on the wing. They were not guarding Robertson on the wing, and they were just sending guys into the paint and saying, all right, Russell Westbrook, you want to make a layup, you're going to have to make it over three people, and one of them is going to be 7'3" or 7'12" or whatever he is, Joel Embiid. Man, how good is Joel Embiid? How skilled is he? I thought Adams actually played really good defense on him, and Adams, he wasn't biting on those pump fakes, and he was really impressive, and man, just... Embiid was just scoring. He was hitting threes. He was going to the rim. He's got a million moves. He's so fleet of foot. His footwork's crazy. He's so fluid. Man, unbelievable watching that kid play. He's going to be something. If he can stay on the court, he'll be something. He's really a special talent. There's no question about that. But the spacing will be an issue. And that's something that you can judge on for sure. The rotations, those things can change. The performance, those things can change. Victor Oladipo is not going to shoot the percentage that he shot on Wednesday for the whole year. But you can talk about the chemistry issues with him and Russ that are on the court. That's something that we can judge. That's something that we were supposed to be looking out for that we saw happen right away. You know, it's a driving guard next to a driving guard. It's a guy who's best with his ball in the hand, who's best with the ball in his hands next to a guy who's best with the ball in his hands. And those sorts of things, they can work. They can work. They just take time. They never work on the first night. And tonight, even though, you know, tonight was the first night. It was the first night. Even though there was a preseason, tonight was the first night. From Jess NZ, your thoughts on LaVerne? And what do you think the Thunder are doing with the four at the moment? Do you think he gets rotated in? So Joffre LaVerne did not play. He was a DNP CD on Wednesday night. The Thunder used Ilyasova. They used Kanter off the bench as their big men. They started Adams. They started Sabonis. Sabonis got 16 minutes. He looked like a rookie playing in his first NBA game. And you know what? I can't blame him. That's fine. I will never blame a rookie who looks like a rookie. But that's the thing with starting Sabonis. Sometimes a rookie is going to look like a rookie. I mean, he's very left-hand dependent. Philadelphia was just goading him to go to his left on a couple of moves that he went down low, and he struggled to get up there. He did hit a corner three. He took three threes, I think. He's going to have to, the thing is that Philadelphia wasn't guarding him. That's the thing. He didn't take threes in college. So he's going to have to prove that he can make the three before guys actually guard him. For now, he's not a floor spacer because guys aren't actually going to guard him. And I think he's going to be a good player. And he was impressive in the preseason. But I do think that there are going to be, you know, The thing with rookies is that rookies tend to go in and out of the rotation. That's what rookies do. I mean, I don't think it's a fair expectation for a rookie who wasn't a top five pick, a top three pick, or top six pick, whatever it is. It's not a fair expectation for a rookie who wasn't insanely highly picked to be able to say, all right, come out, start every single game and never fall out of the rotation. It's not fair. That stuff happens. Guys fall out. And the Thunder have a lot of big men. They're deep at big man for a reason. I mean, I think the Donovan's going to try out a ton of lineups this year. And I do think LaVerne is going to get into the rotation at some point. And I think maybe Ilyasova falls out at some point. And I think maybe Sabonis falls out at some point. I think maybe Singler falls out at some point. I think, you know, maybe Morrow gets in. Maybe Abrines gets out at some point. Like, guys are going to be rotated in and out of this rotation all the time. And I don't think LaVerne's going to be an exception to that. I do think he's going to get time. The Thunder gave up picks to get him. They obviously value him to a degree. There are things that he does well. He can space the floor a little bit too if he, you know, really ever develops that three-point shot. So I think he's going to play. I don't know when it'll be, but I think at some point he is going to get in the lineup. Finally, from Smiling Contender, is there a scenario where Cantor doesn't get traded? He gels so well with Westbrook and Adams on offense, and he's a rebounding monster. He does gel well with Russell Westbrook on offense. He does gel well with Steven Adams on offense. Steven Adams can go inside. Cantor can go outside. Even though when Cantor's outside, it kind of negates a little bit of his offensive rebounding. But still, Adams and Cantor, like I said earlier, Adams and Cantor won them that game. Adams and Cantor grabbed 54% of their team's misses when they were on the floor. That's a crazy number. That is a crazy, crazy number. That's a lot of offensive rebounds. Not those two guys, but when those guys were on the floor, the Thunder recovered 54% of their misses. That's a crazy number. But it just, here's the thing with Cantor. The Thunder need Cantor to play more last year in principle than he did last year in principle, because Kevin Durant is gone. They're not as good offensively. They need more offense. And Enes Kanter is one of their best offensive players. So you want to play Kanter more. Done. That makes sense. But Steven Adams played 25 minutes a game last year, and he's not going to do that. He played over 30 on Wednesday. He's going to average over 30 this year in all probability. So if Steven Adams is averaging more than 5 minutes more than he did last year, Kanter works the best as a five, and you need his offense. That only leaves 14, 16, 18 minutes a night for Kanter at the five. And all of a sudden, you got to play Kanter, what, at least a few minutes next to Adams, if that's the case. There are only so many positions. So you're only so many minutes in a game. So you got to play Kanter next to Adams at some point. Now, sometimes it'll work. It worked. It worked on Wednesday. It's not always going to be the case. When they're going up against, I mean, it's not just Golden State. You know, when they go up against Houston, like, Kanter's not going to be able to defend Ryan Anderson. You go up against a team that has a good stretch four, a team who can, you know, Philadelphia has guys who aren't really stretch fours. They're just small fours. You go up against a team that has a good stretch four. You go up against a team that can pick and roll you to death. Now, Sergio Rodriguez played really well, I thought, in this game. He did play really well, and he did a good job in pick and roll, and he made like a hook shot pass, which is it was a ridiculous pass. The other way, I don't even know how to describe it. It looked like a hook shot, but it was a pass across the court. It was amazing. And he is fancy schmancy out there, Sergio Rodriguez. He played really well, but Philadelphia is not, you know, lethally going to pick and roll you to death. And if Cantor's out there against a team that can do that, that's a problem too. So with those two things, Cantor can hurt you. Now, Donovan does a pretty good job, I think, with Cantor, of finding ways to put him in that accentuate his abilities, because he's really good at some things. He's an amazing offensive player. He is an amazing rebounder. He is a great offensive rebounder, even if he does probably chase too many offensive rebounds. He is great at it, at least. It's not like he's doing it recklessly to no avail at all. He's doing it recklessly to, you know, tons. Can you do something to tons of avail? People always say to no avail. No one says to tons of avail. Is there a chance he gets traded? Or is there a scenario where he doesn't get traded, is the question. Yeah, there's a scenario where he doesn't get traded. He's got a big contract. I could, you know, see a lot of teams saying they don't want it, even though the contract does seem like, you know, it's less expensive now than it seemed like a year or two ago. You know, now this is a market where Bismack Biyombo just got $72 million, and I realize that Bismack Biyombo is actually the polar opposite player of Enes Kanter in terms of style and production and which side of the ball that he produces on and which one that he doesn't produce on. But he just got $72 million, basically in line with the Canner contract. So, come on. I mean, he's a backup center. He's a backup five. Whatever. That's fine. I mean, the Canner contract is big for sure, but I don't think it's like immovable right now. I think there's someone out there who might be able to do it. I don't think it's immovable just on principle. Might be immovable on deal, but I don't think it's immovable on principle. I don't think there are 29 teams looking at that saying, I would never take that contract no matter what. I don't think that's the case. So he could get traded in that case, but it's hard. It's still relatively difficult to move it. I don't know for certain if he gets moved, but the issue is that the fit is just not great. I mean, it's nice to be able to play him 21 to 25 minutes if you have a center who isn't as good as Steven Adams. But when you have to kind of fit the square peg into the round hole or the round peg into the square hole, whichever one it is, when you have to fit that piece in that doesn't quite fit next to Steven Adams, and you can't do it all the time, and you got to play Canner 17 minutes or 14 minutes in half the games because of that, and if you can get value for him, then it makes sense to seek out what that value might be. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head onto iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow. Thunder play their home opener Friday night against Phoenix. I'm going to be previewing that game, probably talking about some more stuff. I'm flying back to Oklahoma City from Philadelphia tomorrow morning, so I'll record that when I get back into town in Oklahoma. I'm back with you for the final show of the week next time. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.